man. It's nice. Going really well. How are you?
I'm fired up.
Yeah.
We've done a couple of these to test them out, and I think we got it all worked out, and I think we're going to really hammer this one out.
Yeah, I think we're trending in the right direction here.
Yes. We didn't rush to get it on the on the ether, so cheers to you, bud.
Excited to be here.
So let's not belabor the thing too much. I had a few ideas jotted down.
Yep.
That we could kind of kick off.
Cool, man. Look forward to it.
So, really, the first thing is, and this might end up, I mean, I know I've got it kind of timed out here, but it might go a bit longer, which is totally cool.
Yeah.
So everybody has been watching. If you watch TV or look at the internet at all, you know what's going on down south.
Right? Yeah.
And I keep hearing things like Islamophobia and xenophobia.
Yeah.
And it's really bothering me. I know it's only words, right? But words are important. And what I wanted to talk about first is this whole suffix of phobia, okay? So I did a little reading on it, and according to the American Psychological Association, a phobia is treated the same way as an anxiety disorder. So it's in the same wheelhouse as like a PTSD, okay?
Right.
And more specifically, it is it's an irrational fear. It's not easily explained, and it's not even predictable. So I went through his whole list of different phobias, and we'll get to it after. But it's like, imagine a dude who is just irrationally afraid of balloons, which is actually a thing. Okay.
Yep.
It doesn't make sense. It's irrational. But when you call something Islamophobia, for example, I think calling it a phobia legitimizes it a bit. And it's not, and I don't think it's the same thing. I mean, granted, we don't treat somebody who has homophobia, for example, the same way we treat somebody who is afraid of balloons, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, but it is still a word, and it's the language, and language is how we make sense of the world in which we live. And I think when you call something phobia, as opposed to just calling it what it is, which is hate and intolerance, it kind of detracts away from the severity of it, right? So like homophobia, for example, is not I'm afraid of homosexuals. It's I hate those dudes. Those dudes gross me out.
Right.
And blah, whatever. Islamophobia, xenophobia, kind of that all-encompassing, we're afraid of that, which isn't, that is different. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm sure there are probably people out there who are like legitimately afraid of, you know, they see two dudes kissing and it's like the irrational fear. But yeah, for the majority of homophobes out there, it's not a phobia. It's just small-minded intolerance and hate.
Yeah. Yeah. Ignorance and hate. And I think, you know, people lose sight of the, as you said before, it's a phobia based on irrational thought, right? But hate is deep-rooted and can be deep-rooted depending on what your views are.
Yeah, environment, you know, like if your dad was the grand wizard of the local KKK chapter, chances are you're not going to be, you know, and dancing with, you know, the African-American broad at prom.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yeah, exactly. So, like, to a point, but it seems to me like, okay, so like this kind of hate and intolerance, whereas a phobia is like an irrational fear of something. Now, granted, I don't have a degree in psychology. I'm just talking out of my ass here. But it is an irrational fear. And we're going to play a little game later. I've got some stuff lined up.
Cool, man.
But whereas hate and intolerance is easily explained, and it is rational, okay? It is, you have been taught to hate something, or something's happened to you and you hate somebody for it.
It's learned.
Yes.
Yeah, you learn.
And more kind of sinister about the whole thing is I see that the media actually distributes his hate. They communicate it and distribute it in a self-serving, this is the sinister aspect of it, so that that's out there, so then the media can then turn around and vilify it.
Yeah, and, you know, they won't even go as far as saying that the labeling of these phobias instills hate, because they are mad that people are afraid based on these acts or these irrational thoughts, and then based on even the lack of knowledge, they form a hate based on not a whole lot of information.
Now you have a background in psychology, right?
I do, yep.
So you could probably speak a bit more to this, but I imagine all it's going to take is some dude, some shifty lawyer who's doing his job well, you know, advocating for his client, who commits a hate crime. And all he's going to have to do is convince a jury that it wasn't a hate crime, that he actually is phobic of that particular group. So the dude walks into a gay bar and shoots up the joint. You and I recognize, and most people, I think, right or left, would recognize that, hey, that's a hate crime. That guy hated homosexuals, went into a club, premeditated, did it up. But there might be a few people out there who are, you know, because of this phobia bit, that'll be like, you know what? He was acting out of an irrational fear. So yeah, while the dude belongs off the street in prison or mental hospital or whatever, they're going to kind of take away that whole, this was a hate-driven kind of thing.
I don't know. I mean, I would hope not, because just because you're afraid of something doesn't give you the right to harm that other person unless you feel threatened, and they would have to justify that threat by, you know, what we know, proximity capability and intent. So again, at the end of the day, I think that they'll be either classified as a hate crime as to what it is, or some other crime within the criminal code, either in Canada or the U.S. or wherever that is. I don't think it's ever going to be minimized by that kind of.
And also kind of
fair.
There's things that I'm afraid of, you know, not like afraid of, but like things that I'm grossed out by.
Right.
You know, I see these pictures of like house spiders in Australia that are like the size of a baseball glove.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not an arachnophobic kind of dude, but like, spiders kind of gross me out, you know, like during the summer when I go to rock the barbecue, I take the rake and I just kind of like get rid of all the spiders because of where my barbecue is, because, you know, I just don't want to hang out with them.
Yeah, it's gross, yeah.
But, you know, if I was a phobe, you know, arachnophobe, I think the last thing I would do would be like go where the spiders are. I'd be like, dude, spiders over there. I'm getting squeamish, I'm getting anxious just being there.
Yeah, exactly, that's right.
So, like, if you were a homophobe, you know, the last place you should probably hang out would be like, you know, South Beach.
Or
gay bar. You'd probably just like stay as far away from as possible.
Yeah.
So, you know, that being said, if you were truly an Islamophobe, you wouldn't go to the mosque and protest. You wouldn't get in their face. You'd be like, you know, you'd get a map of the city you live in and you'd like put a pin where all the mosques are.
If it was a true irrational fear.
Yes. And you would be like, boom, these are where they all are. Where is the furthest I can be away from these people? Right? And you know what? In which case, I'd be like, fair, it's an irrational fear, and you don't want to harm these people. You don't want to infringe on their civil liberties. You just, for some reason, can't handle being around them, and you're creating that distance. Which is, I think it would be unfortunate because it's a, you know, rich part of the whole cultural mosaic that you'd be missing out on, but it's the phobia. That being said, I would argue, without any kind of fact-checking on this, that 99.37% of so-called Islamophobes are not actual
phobes. No, they have a deep-rooted hate, and like you're saying, those who go out and do these horrific acts, you know, mass murder, you know, it's not about phobias. It's about hate. And where that hate comes from, I can't speak to.
And fear.
Yeah, but fear, you know,
But that fear, what I was saying before, that's a fear that's being put on them by the medium.
Yeah.
So CNN is a great example. I've been watching a lot of it in the last couple of days for obvious reasons. And CNN loves to wait and sit and wait, and then when some terrible thing happens that victimizes a group, and then, you know, this week what's been going on, let's just call them Muslims for now, they jump all over. You know, Trump's being terrible, and he is, you know, and I don't want to get in that whole discussion, but, you know, he's playing on a certain sentiment. And CNN is so quick to jump on top of it and be like, you're brutal, you're brutal. Bill Maher, you're brutal. You know, everybody on the left, you're brutal to be like victimizing these Muslims so badly. Yet, every time there's like a fruit and vegetable market in Istanbul gets blown up by a motorcyclist and, you know, 12 people die, and that's a terrible thing, CNN's the first people to be like, you know, it was Muslim extremists, it was jihadist. So they're like double-edged, you know, they're playing it. They're playing both sides. They're putting it out there, they're forcing it down people's throat, waiting for people to react to it, and then vilifying those people. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of delicate. I'm glad we live in Canada. I'm glad that, you know, like this thing that went down in Quebec City earlier in the week, that's a tragedy. To call it terrorism, I'm not opposed to that. I mean, I might not see it exactly as that, but I'm not opposed to people who view it as that. But we kind of got together as a nation, and, you know, I wanted to see a little more outrage. You know, like, everybody was sad, because everybody's always sad when some terrible thing like that goes down. But sadness only gets you so far. I think anger and rage, they get the momentum going to sort it out. But yeah. I do sort of like our response.
Yeah, I mean, like,
because it's a no-brainer. It's a for all the politicians, for, you know, Mulcair, Trudeau, and Ambrose to all kind of get together around that. That's a softball. That's a law ball. That's an easy one. It makes sense in, you know, regardless of where you are in Canada, what your values are. Most people recognize that as being a horrific, terrible, awful thing.
But I think that we can separate the rage and the anger towards something like that. Like, of course, people are going to be upset and angry about that, but that rage can be directed at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel happens in the States a lot. They want a target to blame, whereas in Canada, we just collectively grieve. You know, address it for what it is. And I think the Canadian media does a good job of, you know, trying to separate that from a particular group or target, unless they belong to that group, right? With this guy, it seemed, again, to be a bit of a lone wolf. You know, guys are taking out his own hand to do what he did. But the CBC, to its credit, and other Canadian media agencies, they do a good job of trying to de-escalate as is a government. And that's what we need, is to, like, address the issue as it is, but don't try to take a fanatical response, because that's what's going to cause other backlash attacks that are not going to be really warranted for any reason.
Now, so this guy did this thing, okay? Let's say this guy is not dissimilar from that, what's his name? The name of the kid that went and shot up that church in Charleston.
Oh, he's gone.
Yeah. Right? So here's a guy who went to a place of worship for a group of people that he clearly hates. Shot the place up, killed a bunch of people. Right? Similar in that regard. One was a Christian Baptist church in South Carolina. The other one was a Muslim mosque in Quebec. You know, that's just semantics. God is God. People were peacefully, you know, observing their faith. And then some dude comes in and lights the place up. All right, so clearly this person, according to, like, whatever phobia, the one guy was an Islamophobe, the other guy was a, I don't know what the phobe, you know, Negrophobe, African phobe. I don't know. I don't know what it's called. I'm sure we can look that up. So there's a hate aspect there. But clearly there's probably also a mental health aspect.
Oh, guaranteed.
All right. So most Islamophobes, homophobes, you know, whatever phobe, and I'm using phobia in the terms of hate here, because I don't recognize them as being truly phobic.
Right.
If that's a word, it is now. But these are people, most people who, you know, are homophobic know that, right, I might not like those people. I might think they're a blasphemous, you know, they're unnatural. And we both know people like that.
Of course.
But they also know that I'm not going to get a gun and go and shoot these people. You know, like, they might disgust me, but, you know, I'm gonna not make their wedding cake in my bakery, or, you know, I'm not going to, you know, if I'm the clerk at that county office, I'm not gonna sign their wedding license. So, the hate, and this is where it gets really dangerous, I think, is when you have that kind of hate and intolerance coupled with the person who is mentally unstable, has some mental health issues, where that kind of, you know, that filter isn't there.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, what if one of these days a shifty lawyer who's just doing, like I said, doing their job, is able to convince a jury that this was an irrational act of a mentally ill person? That's why I'm saying we gotta be careful when we throw this word phobia around, because it might not be what we think it is.
Yeah, I think the mental health issue is always going to come into play. And you look at the people who are often radicalized and they tend to be the vulnerable. So, I mean, even if it's not a mental health, there is a sense of belonging that needs to be met.
Yes,
and therefore, they get involved in these kind of things. And
well, you look at all the cults, right? Cults, which are, you know, a cult is what it is, you know. I'm talking about shedding the euphemisms, you know, calling it not a phobia, it's a hate, it's an intolerance, it's a bigotry.
Yeah.
You know, so let's shed the euphemisms. A cult is a religion. It's, you know, a fringe religion that, you know, hasn't been, you know, widely accepted, but it's accepted by enough people that, I mean, they have followers, you know, like that dude out west with the spaghetti strainer.
Yeah.
You know? All right. So, you know, let's just shed, just speak what it is. So these so-called fringe religions, these cults, it's always the same model. They go to bus stations and they find the teenager who's the loner, the guy with no friends.
Yeah.
Or the guy who's probably already got some stuff going on mentally, mental health stuff, and they grab him, they radicalize him. I'm sure the Klan probably did the same. Like, I've never been down into, like, Mississippi, but I'm sure most of the Klan weren't well-adjusted, you know, upstanding, affluent, you know, members of whatever town. There were probably a few of those guys because they were running the community, but most of them were probably poor white trash dudes who were pissed off about something.
Yeah.
You know, again, so there's recognizing that somebody has some mental stuff going on, and they're easily indoctrinated to hate. So, but yeah, so here's I looked up some funny phobias. Alright, before we get into the game, I wanted to run these by. Alright, so here's some interesting ones that I thought were kind of clever. So there's allodoxophobia.
Oh god, man.
Alright, so if somebody's allodoxophobic, it means they're afraid of opinions. This is weird.
Okay.
Alright, so if you, like, give somebody an opinion and they start, like, vomiting, I guess, like, they'd be an allodoxophobe. There's a amnesiophobia. Right? So that's obviously somebody who's terrified of having amnesia. I guess the upside being, if you had it, you wouldn't remember it anyway, so get over it.
So is it, like, strictly, like,
they're afraid of getting it? Maybe.
That condition, or, like, they're afraid of, like, forgetting things.
I think they're afraid of getting amnesia.
Okay.
But like I said, you wouldn't remember it if you did have it, so it wouldn't be...
So whatever.
I don't understand it.
Yeah.
Here's a funny one. Barophobia is a fear of gravity.
Barophobia?
Barophobia. You're like, I guess these are people that can, like, you know, feel gravity pulling on them a little bit. You know, like, they are more tuned in, that they can feel it more. Like,
or they feel that they can.
Or, yeah, you mean like, in their brain. You know, maybe them seeing, like, you know... Who was it? It was Newton, right? Newton's the guy that saw the apple fall.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, this is my eureka moment. Gravity. Cool. They see the apple fall and they probably go running the other direction, I guess. I don't know. This one's funny. This is clearly one that I don't suffer from because I look at myself in the mirror every day. Cassophobia is a fear of ugliness. Right? I'm trying to keep it a little bit light here. Gallophobia is something that a lot of Western Canadians from my stomping grounds suffer from, which is a fear of all things French.
Gallophobia?
Gallophobia.
I'm trying to look at the root word to see, like
the Gauls.
I guess.
And then here's a really good one. Kyphophobia. Kyphophobia is a fear of stopping. So I gotta imagine that that's an exhausting fear to have.
You're like always going?
You're just never not stopping. You're just going all the time. But these are clearly, you know, some strange things that are rational. And to lump those in, at least linguistically, with things like homophobia, you know, Islamophobia, whatever, you know.
Well, as like related
gynophobia. To... Gynophobia.
Yeah, so as it's like related to a crime, but you know, again, it's still the right definition in terms of a irrational fear to be afraid.
If I was willing to accept that 50% of homophobes were actually phobic, which I don't know if I'll ever get there. But let's play a little game about phobias. All right, so I'm gonna say a phobia.
Okay.
And I'm gonna give you three options, and you tell me which one. So it's a real phobia. I'm not making anything up.
Right.
This is all real here.
Okay.
All right. So the first one is agadiophobia, right? Agadiophobia.
Okay, so how do you spell like the first?
A-G-A-T-E-O phobia.
Okay.
Agadio.
Okay.
Is it a fear of cats, a fear of insanity, or a fear of wind? Tough, great.
I
chose ones that weren't obvious.
So, I would go with C, because I would assume that the other two, I could pick them out more easily.
C being wind.
Yeah.
Alright, so it's fear of insanity.
Really?
Fear of cats. Ilurophobia.
So, yeah.
Oh. And wind. Anacrophobia. Weird, right? Alright.
So, we're going to miss.
Number two.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call this one hylophobia. H-Y-L-O phobia. It might be hilo, hylo, whatever. Hylophobia. Is that a fear of forests? A fear of an erect penis?
Okay, what's the word again?
Hylophobia.
Okay.
Or is it a fear of the color yellow?
Oh, man.
I found a website that has all 195 recognized phobias.
Like, there's not, like, I'm looking for a root word or what, like, I don't know.
I know.
I'm just going to like stick with C, because...
Yeah. It's actually a fear of forest.
Ha. Huh.
Alright, so... A fear of seeing, having, or thinking about an erect penis is called ichthyophobia, or just phallophobia.
Yeah, phallic.
Yeah. Gotcha. However, it's also... It has a couple names. It can also be called medorthophobia, or... This one's fun. Metamolecule. Sorry, let me get this one right. Metamoleculophobia, which is the fear of losing an erection.
Okay, I'm sure. Most guys have that.
Like some which, extent. I mean, that'll tie in with this is a clear case. Coitophobia, which is a fear of coitus.
Right.
A little dirty there, but. Alright, the last one, before we get into some funny little other bits here. Pogonophobia. Pogonophobia. P-O-G-O-N-O phobia.
Okay.
Pogono.
Yeah.
Phobia.
Got it.
Is it a fear of rectums, beards, or puppets?
Pogono.
Pogono.
Sort of like Pinocchio.
Yeah, sure.
I'm going to go with C again.
Just C? What was C?
Puppets.
No, puppets was the first one I said. No, rectums, puppets, or beards. So you going with C?
No, puppets.
Puppets, yeah. Okay. It's actually a fear of beards. There is a puppets. It's a poopaphobia. Poopaphobia. And rectums is proctophobia or rectophobia, which is actually the fear of rectal disease. We're really weird. Okay. I'm telling you, there's a lot of weird shit out there. All right. So there's actually a thing called chromophobia.
Okay.
Okay. And so, and I don't think this means that's a fear of colors. This is funny because they measured it and it actually elicits a hormonal and physiological reactions.
Okay.
Right. So this is where we can maybe make the stretch and tie it into a certain kind of racial hate, racial phobia, if you're willing to get that far. For example, fear of the color red is called erythrophobia. So if somebody was like really just terrified of First Nations, right, because they're also referred to as red skin.
Yeah.
But I think that's a stretch. That's a stretch.
Oh, yeah.
White, leucophobia. Black, melanophobia. That's a stretch. I think that's actually like legit the color of black.
At the end of the day, like these are all a stretch, right? Yeah. Because
porphyrophobia, purple, and xanophobia is the fear of the color yellow. So how would that be? Like you just like, if you're afraid of red and green, you probably shouldn't be driving a car.
Or like celebrate Christmas.
Or like New Jersey Devils.
So like your lighthouse would just be gray.
All the
time.
Or
just white or something if you didn't.
I wonder what the treatment for that is. Like, you know, back in the day they'd just be like, this dude's afraid of balloons. Let's just put a bunch of balloons in front of him.
Maybe exposure. And we'll
put the electrodes on him and like give him the electrical shock.
I don't know, like gradual exposure. Like, I don't know, maybe they like work with beige and like who's afraid of the like yellow?
I don't know, man. Like,
I don't
know. That's why I was kinda like, I'm glad our first one is you and me, because I know this is kind of like this is your jam, right? It's like psychology stuff.
But still, man, I mean, like, we're talking about
some
pretty deep, crazy, you know, phobias.
This is some deep down shit. All right. Should we move on?
Yeah, right. Man, sure.
It ties in, though. These all kind of, like, lead into each other, the topic. So the next one is privilege. So I read this really cool thing the other day. Right. So, like, I've been really coming to grips with this whole privilege thing. You know, check your privilege. So because we're in Canada and I'm an Anglophone, white, heterosexual male, that I was supposed to have some kind of privilege. And I was like, well, I grew up poor. You know, I sunk myself into debt to go to school, worked my ass off. So where's the privilege? Now, you've heard me say that. Like, I don't have any privilege. What are you talking about? And then I thought about it, like, hold on. I was able to go to a decent public school and certain doors were probably open to me that weren't open to somebody else.
Yeah.
Because of the color of my skin and language I speak. And the fact that I'm living in Canada and not Mississippi, for example.
Yeah, even like healthcare, you know, education at a basic level. Yeah, of course.
But I still had a lot of problems coming to grip with the idea that for some reason I was more privileged because I worked my ass off. And so I read this thing not too long ago that I think really resonates with me anyway. So what this Facebook meme said is privilege isn't a matter of your status or your position in society. It's a matter of reflection, right? So, if you're a white dude from an upper middle class, lower upper class neighborhood who sees these Black Lives Matter protests and you yep. say, you know what? That doesn't affect me, has no bearing on my life. That dude's got some privilege. Say guy's got a next door neighbor, exact same situation, white guy living in the right neighborhood, kids go to a decent, you know, private school, you know, drives a Range Rover, he's, you know, he went to, you know, Yale, or not even Yale, he went to like a decent school, like Bowling Green or whatever. I'm assuming that it's got a cool name, so I'm assuming it's a good school. But he says, well, that doesn't necessarily affect me. I recognize that there is a problem there.
Yeah.
There's a problem, and we need to fix it. That guy, according to this meme, doesn't have privilege, right? So privilege is not recognizing that problems exist because they don't affect you. I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's not a bad definition.
I really like that. I mean, because, you know, like, it's not my fault that where I grew up, and I'm not going to apologize for it, which is actually the last thing I'll talk about. And I recognize that, yeah, I had it tougher than a lot of my friends did. You know, I did when I was in university, you know, I didn't have the same kind of access and means that a lot of my other buds did, but I was able to do it. So, yeah. It afforded me, you know, I don't think that's a skin color thing or a language thing. I think that's because I'm from Canada.
Yeah.
And those opportunities are available to people. But I recognize that things are pretty messed up and that there's a lot of issues out there. Race relations, inter-religion relations, gender equality, sexuality equality, you know, the whole LGBTQ thing, like. So I would argue, according to that definition, and this is probably why I like it so much, it takes away my privilege because I'm actually cognizant of the issues.
Yeah, and like I think what most people look at the like social convention of, they look at other people in comparison to you or me or whoever, and they go, you know, like they are more privileged in comparison with that person who doesn't have as much, right? And I think no matter what socioeconomic level you're on, if you can identify matters and concerns of the next human, you know, that you're speaking with, that level of empathy is important. Yeah. But there are people, no matter at what level of class or privilege you're in, don't have the ability to recognize.
Yeah. So empathy defeats privilege.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. So that kind of brings me into the last thing I wanted to talk about. And we're kind of just really right on track right now. We're about a minute, 2 minutes ahead of what we had written down.
Got it. Keep her going here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to actually correct one of those no-votes.
Yeah, I do it.
What I wanted to talk about was, all right, so recognizing that you might be privileged or that you had opportunities that other people haven't had or an ease of access to certain things, doesn't necessarily mean you have to be sorry or apologetic.
No.
All right, so here, I got some notes here that I wrote down because this is something, you know, this is something that I actually really don't like. In Canada, like we're an empathetic bunch.
We are.
And, you know, it seems to me that it's almost become, and not just Trudeau, he did the most recent one, but we always do this. Everybody's done this. It almost becomes a national political policy of apologizing for everything. You know, and I'm not talking about the stereotypical, you know, the joke Canadian, like, sorry, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, oh, are you sorry? You know, like that scene from Canadian Bacon.
Right.
Right? But it seems to me that, you know, we're establishing this whole new upper class, and not only socioeconomic, I mean in terms of cultural authority, we called it. I'm going to call them the apologensia.
All right.
Where we're just...
As a group, you mean?
As a group, okay. Yeah. All right. Here's a few examples. Yeah. We've been apologizing to the First Nations a lot the last decade, you know, recognizing, kind of how we went about getting this country, this land, back in the, you know... And I use this we. We'll talk about that in a minute. We kind of, you know... We stole it from them, I guess. We duped them out of it, and then we, killed a bunch of them. So we apologize for that. And, there's the Chinese head tax of 1885 that we apologized for recently. So if we have people listening, what the Chinese head tax was we really brought in a lot of Chinese people to help us build railroads. Right? We all saw that Canadian historic moment where the dude walks into the cave with the jar of nitroglycerin, thing blows up, he comes out, oh, his wife's all happy, he's still alive. You know, something like they say, like, there's a dead Asian for every mile of railroad through the Rockies.
Wow, it's terrible. Type of
deal. Yeah. So we apologize for that. Recently, Trudeau apologized for the Komagata Maru, which was a boatload full of, I believe, Sikhs that we turned away in 1914. We apologized about Japanese internment, which is 1940, 1939 to 1945, whatever. Gathered them up, took away the fishing boats, put them in, camps in the Rockies, and when the war was done, a lot of them didn't get their shit back. So here's my issue. After the thing went down with Donald Trump and this ban, I watched it on CPAC. There was an emergency session of Parliament. So a bunch of dudes showed up, and it was kind of like a question period type of deal. And they could have made a lot of really valid arguments, what are we going to do with these guys now? Because this is like the next 4 years. Should we maybe reevaluate our relationship with the United States? What's going on between the PM and POTUS? Should we maybe start looking elsewhere? Should we amp up the game and, put it out there like, okay, we will take more refugees in, which is kind of like the obvious decision. But there's this one dude from, I don't remember now, Gatineau, whatever. He got up and he had the floor of an emergency session. And he was talking about this motor vessel St. Louis from a German-owned boat in 1939 that had 900 Jews on board. And they had valid visas to go to Cuba. And Cuba was just like, we're not having it. Nope, they turned around. And then from the Cuba, they went to the United States. And the U.S. was like, no, we're not having it. So they came to Canada, and we closed our door on them. Right? And so this guy was just like, keep in mind that this is an emergency session to deal with these, stranded Muslim migrants at, American airports. And this guy used his, however many minutes they get, 5 minutes or whatever, telling this story and how Canada needs to apologize to all those people on the motor vessel St. Louis. And it's like, okay, all right. Yeah, in retrospect, not our finest hour, but maybe there was other stuff going on at the time, the fact that everybody was turning away, I don't want to get into that. But the thing is, we got to deal with the thing that's happening now. They call an emergency session for you to talk about what we're going to do now. And you want to, your default is to fucking apologize for something that happened before you were even born? Has it gone too far?
I think those apologies have some symbolic importance. I mean, certainly with the ones you've mentioned, that's probably not the best time to talk about that one in particular. That's probably just bad timing. I don't think that we should shy away from doing those kind of things, because in the whole route, especially with the First Nations of reconciliation.
Yeah, that's kind of a different one.
Yeah. Right. But there are times when it's certainly important, probably more important than most things that they do to start. But again, yeah, I would agree with you. That that timing was probably off, for sure.
Well, it just bothered me that that was a default. Like yes, looking inward, retroactively, looking back at what we've done,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
You know, the First Nations, because that's ongoing, that's still going on today.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I don't feel, I want to word this correctly because I don't want to sound like a giant douchebag, but I don't feel guilt because I wasn't alive. I feel bad that people had to suffer, but I don't feel guilt because it wasn't me. You know, it wasn't even my family. My family wasn't even here yet. So, I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is, I had written down here, does apologizing deflect from progress? You know, there's healing wounds and all that stuff, and with the First Nations, it's a whole different kind of thing because it's still ongoing. But, like, if we focus so much on the past, does it kind of distract us from what is happening now? And based on what's happening now, how we work ahead into tomorrow? And a good example is that guy. We weren't there to talk about what happened to the Jews in 1939.
Yeah.
We're here, you know, that's a discussion for another time.
Right.
This is an emergency session of Parliament to deal with real life human beings who are, you know, who are being victimized by intolerance, not phobia. Intolerance.
I don't disagree with the action. It's
the timing.
It's timing.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that, you know, on that same light, that if you're going to apologize for something, if you're going to accept responsibility, then there needs to be action that has to happen after that.
And there might be other stuff. Like, this guy might have a heavy Jewish influence in his writing.
Of course.
He's been waiting for his opportunity to drop this.
Yeah. Yeah. And that means, you know, a lot to his constituents. Even the whole nationwide, it probably wasn't the best move for him to do that.
No.
But for his riding, I'm sure that was very important, and it probably shows a lot of his credibility for who he's actually standing up for. So, you know, the backstory would have to be known in order to judge appropriately.
Yeah.
But, you know, from an objective perspective, of course, there was a better time with all the people who were, you know, shut out within, you know, coin flip.
I mean, and there was like a bunch of other stuff going on back in the day. There was other things that we weren't privy to.
Yeah.
Also, you know, like, for example, we're in Halifax.
Right.
Revisionist history is also something that kind of bothers me a little bit. Right. So, like, by any of today's liberal-minded, culturally liberal matrix, Cornwallis was a bad fucking dude.
Some
bad shit.
Yeah.
Lord Kitchener invented the concentration camp. Okay, good. We all acknowledge that if Cornwallis was pulling that shenanigans today, the international community rightfully would be like, dude, what do you think you're doing?
Yeah.
However, when he was, you know, rocking it, it was kind of like, that was modus operandi for the time. You know, that's just how it was. I don't think we need to judge somebody from 1770s,
yeah,
or, you know, Kitchener with the concentration camps in South Africa there. You know, I don't think we need to judge them by today's standards, because it's not fair to them, because they were just behaving as was accepted in their time. So, you know, for people to, you know, remember this, a couple of years ago, they were saying, well, let's tear down the statue of Cornwallis and, you know, Cornwallis Street or whatever.
Yep.
Let's rename it because he was this terrible, you know, like, if he was alive today and doing that, yes, terrible. If he was doing that in 17, whatever.
Yeah, 70s, yeah.
Not so terrible, you know, he was just doing what was done. Yep. Now, that's not to say that it was good, but I just think maybe victimizing him because he was just behaving in accordance with the norms of the day by today's standards isn't not fair. And then, do we really need to apologize? Sure, I mean, it does nothing. It does nothing. It doesn't mean anything to me in terms, it doesn't adversely affect me to apologize.
No, but I, you know, think that, you know, for a guy who did those things based on our norms today, you know, he shouldn't be celebrated, because the celebration of what he did, even back then, if it was appropriate in today's standards, people are still suffering with that kind of thing based on their family lineage, you know, things that he did to his to their family members
years ago. Hitler, so it's sensitive. Like Hitler, the stuff he was pulling, even at the time he was pulling it, was aberrant.
Yeah. You know. Well, of course.
But. So certainly he should be judged by human standards, because I mean, he, at the time he was doing it, now, I mean, I can't think of a single time in history when it was cool to do what he did. Like, he kind of stands out as, dude, that was never cool what you did.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, we've done a lot, like, as a species, we've done a lot of terrible shit to each other.
Yeah. I don't think it's about being judged, more so it is about, you know,
who, just recognizing the sacrifices.
Yeah, like, who do we want to celebrate in today's norms for leaders of the past? And, you know, be it, you know, some are going to transcend the ages, and some are not, as in Cornwallis. But I think that as a society, if we agree that we want to disassociate ourselves with that, that's okay. That's a choice that we can make. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, I don't have any real problem with it. I don't want to be made to feel like I'm a, or judged like I'm a terrible human being because I don't feel guilt.
No, I don't think anyone expects, you know.
There seems some of these social justice warriors are pretty ridiculous about the whole thing.
Guilt, I feel like guilt and responsibility are two different things. I think that, you know, as a government, as a nation, we have responsibility for certain things that happened in the past. Be it guilty, i.e. personal guilt, I don't know if that's reasonable, right? Because guilt should occur based on actions or things that you did or didn't do.
Exactly. I'm not culpable.
Right. But, you know, as a society, we have a responsibility not only to what we did in the past, but what we do now and in the future. So, that part I get.
Yeah. Well, rocking on about 50 minutes here.
Man, heavy.
Yeah, no, today was not lighthearted.
No.
And, you know, for people who might be listening to this, usually I want to be a little more lighthearted, but I think this gave the week we've seen the treatment it needed.
He agreed.
But you want to know one thing I'm never going to be sorry for, bud? I'm never going to ever be sorry for Party Rockin'. Never going to happen. So I'm going to find that song. And we're going to put it up.
What, the LF, what's it called? LFMAO?
Yeah.
LMFAO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm never going to apologize for it.
That was unexpected.
No, you gotta leave it on a high note.
Yeah, okay, man. Yeah, for sure. From Air Supply.
To LMFAO. Well, we had, Emily Haynes and the Soft Skeleton in the middle.
Yeah, she was good rider music.
Yeah, good background stuff.
Yeah.
We'll keep it lighter next time. I just needed to get that.
Yeah, man, that's, you know, I always enjoy our conversations, be it lighthearted or not, and it's always, you know, interesting to see where we'll go.
Yeah, I mean, but there's a good thing about this podcast is some days it's going to be, you know, F-bombs and just jokes, and sometimes it's going to be, like, let's talk about, like, real social situations.
I don't think there was an F-bomb.
I think I threw one or two in.
Wow, it's not bad.
No, not like the first one.
That's, well, that may see the light of day, who knows?
Yeah. Oh, it will, eventually. All right, boys.